Hi, everyone, and welcome to the second episode of our guide on sensitive gender-based violence. Last time, we explored the basic understanding of gender-based violence, international and national provisions, and how media vehicle stereotypes or negative images from proverbs. Today, we'll focus on how gender-sensitive media and journalists should cover this kind of violence. Journalism is a profession which is guided by ethics. These ethical considerations also apply in covering stories with gender dimensions. Seek truth and report it as fully as possible. Inform yourself continuously. So, are you up to date on gender debates or issues? Do you give men and women equal voice? Do you consciously seek out the voices of women as well? When asking policy-related questions, do you consider the different impact on women and men? Do you see giving equal voice to women and men as intrinsic to press freedom? Do you consider the secondary violence that may be caused to women in powerless positions when deciding how to write the story? Do you discuss this with them and find ways around it? Treat sources, subjects, and colleagues as human beings deserving of respect. So, do you treat women, subjects, sources exactly as you treat men? Balance harm and discomfort with alternatives that maximize the goal of truth-telling. So, do you use a story on gender violence not just to highlight the plight of the individual concerned, but the underlying issues? Whether working individually or in groups, there is a number of questions that a gender news critic will look at. What is the story about? Who is telling the story? Whose story is told? Whose story is not told? What does the image show? Are women and men shown? Who is shown in the foreground? Who is in the background? What adjectives are used to describe the girls or women and the boys and men? What does the image or article tell you about girls and women's age, occupation, skills, physical appearance? What do they tell you about the men? Is all the information relevant to the story? If not, why is it included? Is there information missing from the story that would help you understand how men and women are affected by the issue being addressed? And then, what does the story make us think about women, about men, about the relationship between them? Imagine, in a story about violence against women, the reporter included the phrase, "Mrs. X, who smokes and drinks, said she had been gang-raped, beaten up, and robbed on various occasions." What is the effect of adding the detail about smoking and drinking when you are covering this story? What is the intention? What stereotypes about gender-appropriate behavior does it draw on? Does it increase or decrease sympathy for the victim? Does it lead you make inferences unsupported by fact? Does this detail give you any insight into the reporter's own values? Would this affect the reporter's credibility? He has to use accurate, non-judgmental language. For instance, rape or sexual assault is not in any way to be associated with normal sexual activity, and trafficking in women is not to be confused with prostitution. Good journalists will strike a balance when deciding how much graphic detail to include. At all times, the language of reporting should avoid suggestion that the survivors may be to blame or were otherwise responsible for the attack or acts of violence against them. People who suffer in such an ordeal will not wish to be described as a victim unless they use the word themselves. The use of labels can be harmful. A term that more accurately describes the reality of a person who has suffered in this way is survivor. Sensitive reporting means ensuring that the media interview meets the needs of the survivor. The setting must always be secure and private. Recognize that there may be a social stigma affected. Media must do everything they can to avoid exposing the interviewee to further abuse. This includes avoiding actions that may undermine their quality of life or their standing in the community. Treat the survivor with respect. For journalists, this means respecting privacy, providing detailed and complete information about the topics to be covered in any interview, as well as how it will be reported. Survivors have the right to refuse to answer any questions or not to divulge more than they are comfortable with. Use statistics and social background information to place the incident within the context of violence in the community or conflict. Readers and the media audience need to be informed of the bigger picture. The opinion of experts on violence against women will always increase the depth of understanding by providing relevant and usual information. This will also ensure that media never give the impression that violence against women is an inexplicable tragedy that cannot be solved. Tell the whole story. Sometimes media identify specific incidents and focus on the tragic aspects, but reporters do well to understand that the abuse might be part of a long-standing social problem, armed conflict, or part of a community history. Maintain confidentiality. As part of their duty of care, media and journalists have an ethical responsibility not to publish or broadcast names or identity places that in any way might further compromise the safety and security of survivors or witnesses. This is particularly important when those responsible for violence are the police or troops in a conflict or agents of the state or government or people connected with other large and powerful organizations. Use local resources. Media who contact experts, women's groups and organizations on the ground about proper interviewing techniques, questions and places will always do good work and avoid situations such as where it is unacceptable for male camera workers or reporters to enter a secluded place which can cause embarrassment or hostility. There is always virtue in reporters educating themselves on the specific cultural context and respecting them. Provide useful information. Reports that include details of sources and the contact details of local support organizations and services will provide vital and helpful information for survivors or witnesses and their families and others who may be affected. Reporting on gender-based violence requires getting beyond the single sex abuse story, for example, to a much bigger, informative story that puts the problem in context and seeks institutional response. When we ask them why they do not do enough coverage of this kind of violence, many journalists argue that they hardly get access to the victims. Of course, gaining access to a victim of sexual abuse and build a relationship in order to produce a thoughtful, sensitive, well-researched piece can be very challenging for a journalist, but it is doable. We can gain access to them through the people they trust, for instance, their lawyers, their advocates, their family members. This approach requires, of course, a lot of patience because you're dealing with intermediaries. You reach out to the lawyer, for instance, who weighs your sincerity. By then, a victim has gotten your letter and knows what you want and perhaps just needs to hear your voice. Victims are much more willing to not just open up to you, but give you access to case records and all the documentation you want if you give them the power to decide whether to contact you or not. During the interview with victims of sexual abuse or any other kind of abuse or trauma, a number of ethical, legal, and professional considerations need to be taken. Remember that this person is reliving the trauma by sharing his or her story, and you don't want to re-traumatize anyone. That doesn't mean you don't ask probing questions. It means you think about when and how to do so. The unusual habit of journalists is rushing. This can be counterproductive in this kind of violence coverage. When you want to interview a victim, block out enough time to build the relationship and get her or him to open up. You just sit and listen first. People need to feel comfortable talking about sexual abuse, a very uncomfortable topic, of course. Do not ask too many questions at first. Loosen people up by encouraging them to talk about themselves. Then lead the conversation toward the abuse and let them first tell you what they want to. Always offer the chance for victims to use a pseudonym. More often than not, those who say they'll only talk on the condition of anonymity decide, after speaking with you, that they want to go public. So never make that a condition. If the abuse has been documented in a complaint, for instance, we need to seek access to those documents. But try also to gain access to those documents like personal letters and journal entries. Reporting on these cases makes a journalist vulnerable legally, so you want to verify. If there isn't paper to back up anecdotes, then talk with friends, family members, or institutional sources who may have known about the abuse. Just try to be as honest and as upfront with victims as possible about what you are writing, which is a valuable principle for reporters generally. As a professional reporter, you need other sources in addition to the victim or the survivor. Lawyers who represent victims of abuse are very good sources. They tend to specialize in these types of cases and to know a lot. If there are state legislators who head up the committees dealing with vulnerable populations like children, elderly, the mentally ill, try to reach out to them. Try to be proactive because most abuse victims remain in the shadows. Remember, ethical reporting on survivors, gender-based violence is governed by some principles. The dignity and rights of every survivor are to be respected in every circumstance. In interviewing and reporting on survivors, special attention is to be paid to each survivor's right to privacy and confidentiality, to have their opinions heard, to participate in decisions affecting them, and to be protected from harm and retribution. The best interests of each survivor are to be protected over any other consideration, including over advocacy for survivor issues and the promotion of survivor rights. Do not publish a story which might put the survivor, siblings, or peers at risk, even when identities are changed, obscured, or not used. While interviewing survivors, do no harm to any survivor. Avoid questions, attitudes, or comments that are judgmental, insensitive to cultural values, that place a survivor in danger, or expose a survivor to humiliation, or that reactivate a survivor's pain and grief from traumatic events. Explain the purpose of the interview and its intended use. Obtain permission from the survivor and his or her guardian of all interviews, videotaping, and when possible, for documentary photographs. When possible and appropriate, this permission should be in writing. Permission must be obtained in circumstances that ensure that the survivor is not coerced in any way and that she or he understands that she or he is part of a story that might be disseminated locally and globally. This is usually only ensured if the permission is obtained in the survivor's language and, in the case of a child survivor, if the decision is made in consultation with an adult the survivor trusts. During reporting on survivors, do not further stigmatize any survivor. Avoid categorizations or descriptions that expose a survivor to negative reprisals, including additional physical or psychological harm, or to lifelong abuse, discrimination, or rejection by the local communities. Always provide an accurate context for the survivor's story or image. When interviewing a child, always change the name and obscure their visual identity if they are identified as a victim of sexual abuse or exploitation, a perpetrator of physical or sexual abuse, HIV positive or living with AIDS, unless the survivor, a parent or a guardian gives fully informed consent and charged or convinced of a crime. In conclusion, Gender stereotypes are deeply ingrained in our socialization. We can never hope to be completely objective, but we can aim to be fair. We need to learn to identify our gender biases and then make a social effort to overcome them.